From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm Hunter Deusing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado is Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And from the Cecil Hotel on Skid Row in sunny Los Angeles, Mr. Eric Zaldivar. Say hello, Eric.
Hello.
And today, my guys, we are talking about King Kong, not the original. Not the original classic, Marion C. Cooper, you know, all that good stuff. No, we are talking about the 1976 John Guillermin film, written by Lorenzo Simple Jr., produced by Dino De Laurentiis, always a sign of quality, and starring Jeff Bridges, starring Jessica Lange's body, and starring the late Charles Grodin, who John killed, R.I.P. Charles. So,
God damn it. It never ends.
And so, yeah, King Kong, John, you are the only person on this podcast who was alive when this movie came out. What are some memories you have of the release of King Kong? Cuz this was a pretty big movie from what I've read.
What I remember back in 76, this was the first film I can recall, and I quizzed a boomer friend of mine if he could confirm this. This is the first film to have all the cross-promotional tie-in stuff, like fast food restaurants and beach towels and board games and just anything they could stick King Kong on, like the image of his mouth open growling, like, back in 76, they did it.
This was post-Jaws, right? I mean, it was...
Right, because what happened was Jaws didn't have that type of hype before it opened. It was just like, okay, it's based on a novel and, you know, the bestseller and, you know, Jaws opens the summer, new meaning and terror, whatever the hell. I think they opened in the summer. And at that time, the summer was not a big opening time for movies. And Jaws was like, of course, a monster hit. And then you saw the beach towels and the crossover stuff and, you know, the games and everything, because Jaws was probably in the theaters for a year. I mean, it was that big a hit. And so Kong, because Dino De Laurentiis wanted that Jaws money, so he wanted like a big monster movie, big giant animal movie. So he gets Kong, he books it in theaters, I think, a year in advance. They don't do this anymore. And they had to get that thing going, and they had all the cross-promotional tie-in stuff you could think of. You know, you couldn't get away from hearing about King Kong and seeing the ads on TV and, you know, you go to Burger King and you get these really nice glasses with the production art on it and everything.
I was talking to a Gen X guy at work, and he said he got some promotional, like, keychain that had some fur from the one of the suits. Or maybe the big animatronic one. He said, like, you know, because I talked to him and I said, oh, I watched a movie from your childhood. I watched King Kong. And he was like, oh, yeah, I had this keychain with the fur. Oh, I wish I hung on to that. You know, he all the memories came flooding back.
Well, I'll tell you the weirdest thing. A couple of years ago, my sister gave me this item she found at a garage sale. It was a King Kong Jim Beam flask.
Wow.
And it was shaped like King Kong, and it's like it was a tie-in with Jim Beam.
Jim Beam.
You kids love the Jim Beam. It's like, in all fairness, the drinking age was 18 at the time everywhere, and so maybe they were promoting it to hardcore booze hounds of 19 and 20, the type of cats you would see in Dazed and Confused. You know, except for real, I suppose. I don't know.
Hey, man, you got
Matthew McConaughey's character, right?
You got a Kong flask? It'd be a lot cooler.
Well, that is the weirdest thing that I own. I don't collect anything from that movie or whatever, but I just ended up with that because my sister found it at a garage sale for like $5 or $10.
I'm looking at Burger King cup. I don't know if it's not Burger King, but vintage 1976 King Kong movie plastic concession cup.
Could be Burger Chef. Well, no, I think, okay, Burger King had the glasses. Like, Burger King had these really nice glasses with the artwork on it.
I remember the Flintstones had the same thing, but at McDonald's, I think it was. They had these flasks. But King Kong, it's the poster artwork, the 76 one, and at the back it says, there's still only one King Kong.
And the funny thing is, I didn't see it in 76. I did get to watch the original 33 version on TV. They had a highly promoted airing of it, and because of the remake being in theater. So I remember watching that. And but never saw the 76 version until NBC aired it in 78 and over two nights. And I remember that because Battlestar Galactica was premiering that night, and I had to make a choice because, of course, we had no VCRs or whatever, nothing to record something on the other stations. So you had to actually choose what you watch, and I chose King Kong because I'm going to go for the monsters instead of the Star Wars ripoff.
Probably a good choice. I think.
Yeah, I think it was. I've never been crazy about that show. So, but King Kong, I remember I watched King Kong those two nights and, you know, loved it a lot then. Loved Jessica Lange at 6 years old.
Yeah, I'll bet there was an awakening that happened.
If Linda Carter didn't do it, she would. You know, they reaffirm where you're going in life, at least below the belt.
I'm just going to go. Oh, go ahead, Eric.
No, just strangely never looked that good ever again.
No, she never did. It was really weird.
I'm going to go ahead and say that this is the horniest King Kong movie. Just going to go ahead and put that
out
there.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. We have a 3-hour extravaganza of where the Fay Wray character actually holds a love affair with the monkey. That exists, but yet this is the horniest one of all.
Yes. I could not believe when I watched this how I've never seen a movie that lusts after its lead actress the way this one does. I think maybe Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror comes close because, you know, that's the movie that wrecked his family. But
right. Because he was banging Rose McGowan.
Yeah. And like when you watch the film, like his camera is just ogling her the whole film. But this movie is ogling Jessica Lange every shot. You know, her character gets discovered on a, you know, she's a yacht has gone down. She's some yacht girl, you know, one of these types. She's like Meghan Markle or something. And, and it goes down and she's rescued by the ship. And, you know, the ship full of dudes just happens to have a ton of skimpy outfits for her to wear. all these like insanely skimpy outfits, you know. But this is a, I was, and you know, the my favorite line in the whole film is when Jeff Bridges is like, we've got a girl out there who's being chased around by a giant turned on ape.
Yeah, and there's various references to her being raped by the ape and stuff like that.
Yes. Eric sends me this clip of Charles Grodin. She's like, he saved my life. And Charles Grodin goes, he tried to rape you.
Yeah, I was cracking up because I had not seen this in years. I watched it on HBO Max. My first time watching the theatrical version and in widescreen. I had never seen it scoped. I'd always seen it in pan and scan thing on TV.
Looks good in widescreen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely shot that way. I mean, Guillermin was he had directed, I think, The Towering Inferno the year before.
Yes, he had.
And they're clearly going for the Irwin Allen disaster movie vibe because that was also big money at the
box
office.
There was also a movie called Hurricane that Roman Polanski was attached to, and then Guillermin was attached to. And apparently De Laurentiis went to Polanski first to do this movie. So we had like these two, and then it went to Guillermin. But we had these two directors that were working on Hurricane.
Yeah.
Guillermin, he did some of those Tarzan movies. You know, we just did Tarzan and the Valley of Gold. He did Tarzan Goes to India.
You did Tarzan's Greatest Adventure, which is probably the best Tarzan movie ever made. So,
yeah, very, very. He does the disaster movies, but he's also good at the animal film. Even though
he does good jungle action, he knows how to shoot like tropical locations and make them look dangerous or exotic or whatever.
Eric, what was your first experience with King Kong 1976? How did you become aware of it? Like, what was your first interaction with it?
Without realizing it, I was probably aware of it before I was even aware of any of the original. Just because my parents, I'm sure a lot of people saw it in 76 and my parents were one of them. But being a good South Floridian, we would go to, you know, the theme parks in Orlando, and they had a King Kong ride. It was a confrontation in Universal. And it is clearly based on the 76 Dino De Laurentiis.
Yes.
Yeah, it's in fact.
I went on that in Universal Studios back in 92, I think.
I never went on it, but I would always see it in ads. You know, because it was always, they were always using it to sell Universal Studios.
Anyway, it was pretty neat. From what I
believe it was a flagship ride for them on at the Universal Studios in California for their tram ride, for their backlot tour. It was a segment of that, and you'd go through in the tram through a New York set, and you'd confront Kong. And then they moved that over for its own isolated attraction sometime in the early 90s for the Orlando park. But it's clearly based on the 76 movie. In fact, I've seen this movie twice. Rewatching it today, I realized the only good rampage scene, I think, in the entire movie is the that small segment where he attacks the New York train.
That's awesome. That scene is great.
I
would put that up with any kaiju, like up there with any kaiju movie. Like that is an excellent scene. I know it's just one bit in the whole film, but that is a bit that is awesome.
That's the problem is the rest of it is dreadful.
Yeah.
It needed more scenes like that for the New York segment. But that scene clearly was what inspired that ride.
Yes, it is. Very much so.
So that was my awareness of Kong at the time. I'm pretty sure as a little kid I was aware that there was an older movie from the black and white days. But I hadn't seen it and I wouldn't see it until the release of the Peter Jackson movie, because they came out with a tin box. Release of it, if you recall that.
Which
I have
the,
that.
The Blu-ray of King Kong, the original, goes for buku bucks now.
Was it like a limited release or something?
It's out of print, you know.
I have is that DVD one with the tin box.
The Blu-ray.
The Blu-ray version of that
goes for quite a bit. Although I lucked out and got it for like $15 used.
No, I got like the DVD box set, which was the first time I'd watched it, I think, since it was aired on Cinemax in like 1985 or something, when they had a restored version with Kong eating the natives and everything.
My first exposure to King Kong as a thing was I saw it on TV when I was a kid, the original, the old school King Kong.
One of the highly touted Turner broadcast,
yes.
I'm sure.
Yes, yeah. It must have been. And I watched it and thought it was awesome. Probably, you know, I talk about going and renting Godzilla movies, but I think the seeing King Kong on TV put the bug in my head.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And it definitely did something for me when I saw it in 76.
As far as kaiju movies go, we would not have kaiju movies without King Kong. You know, that's just how it goes. It's the origin of the species for that genre. But I didn't become aware of the remake from 76 until I read the Golden Turkey Awards. Yes, the Golden Turkey Awards, the Bible. You know, without Golden Turkey Awards, I don't think you have MST3K. You don't have Michael Medved's Zionist talk radio show.
Note to self, if a time machine is invented, go back and kill the Medved brothers before they write Golden Turkey Awards.
And King Kong, if you like the Golden Turkey Awards, for those of you who don't know, it was Michael Medved who and Harry Medved, these two brothers. Michael Medved went on to become a right wing AM talk radio guy.
Yeah.
But
Holly Weird.
Yeah. Hey, Holly Weird. Yeah. Hey,
Holly Weird.
But he would always review movies like Sweet Liberty. But the Golden Turkey Awards was as far as I know, it was the first time we were gonna take Hollywood like garbage movies and gather them in one place and make fun of them.
Yeah.
And garbage is a loose term, because there's plenty of movies in that book that I would argue are good or okay, that they hold up as examples of trash.
Well, a lot of times they would attack movies because of the title.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It had nothing to do with it. They hadn't even seen the film. They were just attacking it for the title.
Absolutely.
They had misinformation about like Ed Wood movies, like Plan 9 from Outer Space. Like they claimed he had paper plates burning for the flying saucers, which I don't think that would last long enough for 35mm film takes.
Yeah. And so the Golden Turkey Awards, it gives awards for all these silly categories, right? Worst casting, John Wayne as Genghis Khan and the Conqueror. Worst two-headed transplant movie, The Thing with Two Heads.
Yeah.
You know, worst performance by a novelist, Norman Mailer in Wild 90, which is probably accurate.
Yeah, they're probably very correct.
Yeah,
they're
probably right there. Worst blaxploitation movie, Scream Blackula.
Yeah, not the worst.
Scream Blackula.
They had not seen very many. Obviously.
Yeah, there's a lot worse. Actually, one of the choices that I thought was kind of bold that had balls was when they worst actor, Richard Burton.
Yeah, I mean.
I was like, okay, Richard Burton has been in some bad movies, but he's been in a lot of classics too.
But even when he's in garbage, he's perfectly watchable.
Yes,
he's
never
a great Welsh voice, and
I remember thinking that was insane even when I was young. And
I watch like bad Richard Burton movies, and he always makes them worth watching.
Although it was almost right. They gave worst film to Plan 9 from Outer Space, which this book is where that movie gets its notoriety.
Yeah.
But the runner-up, okay, this is the worst movie of all time, Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Yes.
I remember when we did our podcast on it, I think this is the worst movie I've ever seen.
It does suck.
It's terrible. But anyway, they gave King Kong 1976, the award, and this is a bullshit award, is biggest ripoff in Hollywood history.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's a remake. But they would talk about it like it was some failure because, okay, Carlo Rimbaldi did the special effects with Rick Baker, and they built this giant animatronic Kong.
Which Rick Baker had nothing to do with.
Right. That was Rimbaldi, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Rimbaldi built it with another guy who's credited in the end credits.
And so that they have this giant animatronic Kong they built. It's in the movie for like 5 seconds. You can barely see it. It's in a few shots with the when Kong is revealed in New York and at the big gas event.
Yeah, and it's so Italian to think they could build a giant Kong robot.
Yeah, that.
Hey, we gotta build a big Kong.
Hey,
it's like not
build
even
a
thinking
Kong.
In terms of scale or, you know, just like the viability of doing that. It's like They Dino, I think, was going around claiming that the robot Kong they were building was going to be able to do all sorts of stuff.
Yes,
and all it could do there is walk there and move. It could stand there and move its arms. And that's it.
There's a reason why you see it for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, it is barely in the movie. Most of the time, when you see Kong, it's Rick Baker in an ape suit.
Yeah, even the close has in those scenes is Rick Baker.
All the big animatronic Kong, it's all long shots. You see him in the distance, and even then, it looks bad. Even then, like, you can tell it's a big, stiff thing.
Well, according to people who were there that night for the shooting, who worked as extras, they said when they unveiled it, and like they were acting like it was going to do all this stuff, and it couldn't do anything except move the arms.
And that was the focus of the mockery in the Medved's article, was that, oh, they couldn't pull off this big robot Kong, so it's just a guy in an ape suit.
Well, some dumb critics actually believed the press hype and thought it was a robot through the whole thing.
Oh, well, that's what they were hoping you would do. Dino was hoping they would hear that and think Rick Baker in the ape suit was a robot, which it's not.
They gave an Oscar to Rimbaldi, and no thanks was given to Rick Baker. He wasn't even mentioned.
Which, I'm sorry, Rick Baker is the star of this movie.
Yeah. Opinion. Well, is it true, Hunter? Do you have the Shout Factory Blu-ray?
I do, yeah.
Okay, I've heard it has like a lengthy interview with Rick Baker as a commentary track, basically. It's like a 2-hour interview. And he apparently, I guess all the NDAs have long expired, and he goes to town on his experience. That's what I've heard. I heard it's worth buying just for that.
I did not dig into it, but oh my gosh, I need to go look. But the back of the Blu-ray doesn't list any of the special features, really. It the big selling point is the TV cut.
Right.
One of our listeners, Lauren Portillo, was like, oh man, you know, I haven't seen it since the 70s. I'm going to buy it just to watch it for that, you know?
Yeah, Lauren was a teenager when that came out, so he loved, you know, it has a special place in his heart, so. Which I get it. You see
but
stuff at that.
If that is love. On there, that would be very interesting because Rick Baker, you know, he doesn't get the credit he deserves for this movie because he's playing the ape. He's doing, you know, basically what Andy Serkis did in the Peter Jackson one. He's playing the monkey. But
he also made the suit.
Exactly. Yeah. He also built it. And, you know, Rick Baker also was in Harry and the Hendersons, which he also did the ape suit for that. He did Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes, which is a terrible film, but his work on it is stunning.
He made Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall look old in Coming to America. The first time.
Yeah. Just a genius. And I was going to say, you know, I read the Medved article on it and I didn't see it till I watched it for this podcast. And I couldn't believe how good the ape effects were. And it was all the Rick Baker stuff. You know, I knew it was Rick Baker in a suit for most of the movie. And I was kind of, honestly, I was kind of expecting Godzilla versus King Kong, the Ishiro Honda one. You know, I was expecting something akin to that. And no, the ape suit and the ape acting and the ape facial expressions are incredible.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this is great. You know, all that stuff was really well done.
Well, you know, there was a competition between Rimbaldi and Rick Baker for making the emergency ape suit for a lot of that stuff. And I think they knew ahead of time they were going to need an ape costume because they knew that damn automaton wasn't going to be able to do a whole lot. And so apparently one of Dino's sons put an ad in Variety or whatever newspaper was in Hollywood, you know, with announcing auditions. They said they were looking for black actors with ape-like features. So then when Rimbaldi was making his ape suit, Rick Baker claims that they basically both showed up at the, you know, with Guillermin and De Laurentiis and all those guys to show off their costumes to audition one or the other for, you know, for the Kong role. So Rimbaldi shows up and he has the ape suit on our old favorite, Albert Popwell, the actor from the Dirty Harry films.
Wow.
Who played a different role. Albert Popwell, who was a former dancer and could have done all the movement and stuff very athletically, was going to play King Kong if Rambaldi's suit got the gig or got the nod. And according to Ray Baker, that suit looked terrible. And they said it was and Dino was already under fire because of the black actor thing in the paper. So, you know, Popwell probably wasn't going to, they didn't really want to use Popwell. So, and Rick Baker's costume was obviously his ape suit was much, much better and looked a lot better. And Rick, you know, I think he'd been making ape suits for years. You know, even when he was a kid, he was making them. So he made a way better one than Rambaldi.
So I'm
and
seeing,
so he got the gig.
I'm seeing that Rick Baker, there is a new audio interview with Rick Baker on the.
Yeah, apparently it's amazing. I seriously thought of, I'll probably buy that Blu-ray when it's on sale just to listen to the Rick Baker.
Well, and I'll tell you, it looks great. You know, I know Shout Factory can be hit or miss, but, you know, and there's some shots where the optical printing is, it is what it is, but it looks very good. I was stunned by how good it looked. And so one thing about this remake is it kind of deviates from the original. The original is about a film crew that goes to Skull Island to make a movie, and you know, they get to this island, and there's Kong, but there's all these monsters there, and you know, Kong fights dinosaurs, and he fights, you know, all kinds of creatures, and they run into brontosauruses and stegosauruses and all kinds of stuff. This movie, it's not a film crew, it's an oil company. And Charles Grodin, instead of a film director, instead of Carl Denham, you have Charles Grodin as this oil executive. And you have the dude himself, Jeff Bridges, as a paleontologist who sneaks on board. And he is the dude in this movie.
He's an annoying, he's a very annoying.
Hey man, I just want to go see the ape, man.
Yeah, he's like Greta Thunberg with a beard.
Hey,
like
you
he
know,
gets all he gets all left wing with.
But I love some of his lines though. Like, we've got a giant turned on ape chasing around, and the Medveds use that as a point of mockery. That he says there's a giant turned on ape. I remember reading that and going, that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it's meant to be funny.
Yes. Obviously.
Well, the thing with the reason it's an oil company is because the energy crisis was going on at
yes,
the time.
Yes, this was the '70s. Energy crisis ain't going to stop us now. Oh no, dictators, you know.
Yep. yeah, it was a big thing, and with the oil companies and everything, and you know, and but Jeff Bridges has like the worst beard I think in the history of films.
Oh, it looks like his face is twice as big as it should be.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He looks like Captain Caveman, the Hanna-Barbera cartoon character.
But they pick up this girl who's like a yacht girl, like a Meghan Markle type, whose yacht went down, and they take her on the ship with them, and they go to Skull Island. But Skull Island is not, it's not as fantastical as it was in the original.
They don't call it Skull Island.
No, they don't. I'm just calling it Skull Island for the sake of, you know, Skull
Island. You know, the reason why was because Universal in 1974 was doing their own Kong remake.
That's right.
Which
Legend of
they
Kong.
Decided not to do because De Laurentiis, I think, was throwing enough cash around. Like,
yeah.
I think he was giving them a percentage of it or something. And but they were going to do it where it was set in the 30s, and it was going to have dinosaurs. It was going to be a more straighter remake, you know, love letter to the original. And it was going to have dinosaurs and stop motion. It was probably going to have stop motion dinosaurs and Bob Burns in an ape suit or something. They were going to do something a little different.
Yeah, the rights to Kong are kind of a total
messy.
It's a total mess. Apparently, like, Universal and Paramount had their confusion over who was able to do one. It turned out Marion C. Cooper's son had the rights, and so they paid him off. But, you know, Universal tried to sue Nintendo when Donkey Kong came out. Sid Sheinberg, the most litigious boss in Universal history, they tried to sue Nintendo, but Nintendo hired some really clever lawyers who basically figured out that You know, Universal actually has no claim to this, and, you know, they're just trying to bilk money out of us. And so Nintendo, like, won this lawsuit, and it was a big boon for them. Like, you know, one of their lawyers became the president of Nintendo of America, and the other one was this round guy named Kirby. So, you know, that's where we got the video game character Kirby from. He was named after one of their lawyers.
He gets.
Yeah.
You have video game guys in your trivia.
Yeah, no. This I saw an interview with this guy. He's like this round pink guy named Kirby.
You know, well, getting back to the movie, what I thought was really odd and in bad taste was Dwan, the yacht girl. Mm. She mentions Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Saving.
I didn't want to watch Deep Throat, so I went up on the deck and I got thrown off.
Could this be more 70s?
I know, yeah, they bring up pornography, but this movie is definitely, you know, as lusty as any. Probably hornier than Deep Throat, if we're going to be honest.
Well, it came out the same year as Mandingo, so that was sort of like Paramount's thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They were making big, you know, lusty movies or whatever. Yeah, you know, because adults still went to films back then. This might be stunning few kids today, but grown-ups actually went to the movies.
Right.
You mentioned that's Skull Island. It's not Skull Island. They don't mention it as Skull Island, but did you notice in the infrared radar that it resembled a monkey skull, or at least an ape skull?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't have the fights with dinosaurs. In fact, the only fight you get is Kong with a snake. But... It is a shockingly violent fight.
It is, but the snake looks like they bought it at TG&Y the day before and threw it in there with Rick Baker and put a blood packet in it for him to break in half.
Yeah, it's a gory fight, but yeah, it's I think they forsook all that stuff so they didn't just to save money, you know.
Yeah, they did. They were in a rush. Like, it was a rushed thing. I think when the automaton was fucked up and they oh, God. Because there's even a reference, and it's mentioned in the IMDb trivia page. It's very true. Like, when they're going into the island and they see a tree knocked over, Jeff Bridges says that wasn't knocked over by a man in an ape suit. So, obviously, when they filmed that, they thought, oh, this thing is still – we're going to have this robot doing cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't know. No, it actually was a man in an ape suit that knocked this thing over. So, you know.
Yeah. And I got to say, the ape suit looks good. It looks better than any kaiju movie, you know.
The ape suit looks good, but, like, the miniatures, with the exception of the train sequence, but especially on the island, they have these sound stages that look bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
They look like, okay, say you're on the Shaw Brothers movie town, and there's maybe this set over in the corner. The soundstage nobody really likes to use. It looks like that soundstage.
Well, I really like the tribal wall. I like that set.
Yeah, because really I think good. They actually built it, right?
I think it's an actual wall for the most part.
Yeah, because Baker smashes through it in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, Baker, you see him, like, ripping through the wall. It looks great. That's one moment where I was like, wow, that's cool, you know.
Yeah, but I know the scenes you're talking about where it's a remake of the log scene from the
original. Oh, yeah, it's awful looking.
Yeah.
It's really terrible.
Yeah.
I was like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah. The effects in this movie are really hit or miss, but I think the real MVP is Rick Baker with his work with the suit. I expected it to look terrible. Based on the Medved stuff, even though I knew those guys were smug bastards. I didn't expect it to look as good as it looked. I remember thinking, hey, this isn't so bad. This is, you know, this puts a lot of the Japanese stuff that I love to shame, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the best King Kong has ever looked. I mean, I don't count any of that cartoon stuff post 2005.
Well, honestly, I'd rather watch Rick Baker in a suit than the Andy Serkis stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I say that like, you know, Peter Jackson obviously is passionate about this stuff, but nobody remembers the King Kong 2005 movie.
No.
It's a mess. Have you ever watched it?
Yes.
Well,
it's a
3-hour long fan film. It's just like it worked in the theater for me, and then I saw it at home and I was just like, oh, this is nothing.
That's perfect, because when I saw it in the theater, I went, okay, that was fun. And then I tried watching it on DVD and nope, you know, just just yeah. got bored real quick.
I mean, I'd rather see something that was actually on camera. I've said this before. I'd rather see something that was in front of the camera yes. than something that was done in post.
Yes. And I got to say, guys, I haven't watched Skull Island because I don't want to see King Kong mocked like that. I want to, I, you know.
No, you're not missing anything.
You gotta have, I at least Jackson was like serious, you know. I'm making a King Kong movie. It's prestigious, you know. Whereas Skull Island, it's like a Marvel movie. Like, hey, we're all making jokes. It's jokes.
Yeah, it's
hey,
it's,
here's John C. Reilly. He's gonna make jokes.
It's very overrated by fans, like genre fans, who I thought would know better. They love Skull Island, and I don't know why.
It's directed by that filthy hippie.
That Bin Laden wannabe?
Yeah, Jordan Vogt Roberts.
Yeah, he's got like a suicide bomber beard. And
yeah, and he makes up stories about like, there was this racist Trump supporter on a plane, and I beat him up.
Yeah, he's wearing like a MAGA hat.
He was wearing a MAGA hat and saying stuff about minorities, and I showed him.
That yeah, and he had like good. A Gavin McInnes book in his under his arm and yeah. like, beat him with it.
It's like I feel like Adam Sandler in Billy Madison. No, you didn't.
He was watching How to Be a Man in the in-flight movie.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about one movie that's been completely zoned, memory hold.
Oh, yeah, totally.
It used to be on Netflix. It was on Netflix for like 5 years, and then it was pulled. And
yeah.
Like, you can't find it anywhere.
Nope.
Hey, he was like, yeah, he had a Gavin McInnes book, and I think he was listening to Adam Carolla on his MP3 player.
And I said, you're not allowed to do that because that's bad, and I punched him in the face. And that showed him
who's totally
bust.
Racist.
And here's a blurry picture of a guy like moving around on an airplane. That's a goof.
It's about as real as Michelle Obama's Secret Service stories.
Even though Hideo Kojima, I'm very grateful because he gave us a new verb lately, snidering.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He was talking about Army of the Dead, and he said snidering. Mm-hmm. So snidering is now a verb, all right? Add it to the dictionary. But okay. But Hideo Kojima is working with Jordan Vogt Roberts, and so I'm still mad. Like, I'm sorry, Jordan, I do not like this man. He's bad.
Yeah, maybe it won't happen. It's been in development for so long.
I hope it doesn't, because, you know, I don't want to watch a Jordan Vogt Roberts thing, you know.
Yeah.
But King Kong.
Yeah. Did we get sidetracked? We never do that.
No, it never happens. Did you ever watch the TV cut, John? Is it any different?
That's what I saw. I have not seen it since 1978, or I definitely watched a rerun, so I probably watched it again in 79. I have not seen it since. I don't remember what extra stuff. It seems like there was more stuff on the island. Yeah. There was more dialogue on the ship. I understand it was like 45 minutes longer.
It's like 3 hours, yeah.
I don't think there was more Kong stuff. I don't think there was more monster stuff, but I cannot remember. I couldn't honestly tell you.
No, yeah, it's I haven't watched it yet. It's on the Blu-ray, but I can't imagine that they cut out any cool effect stuff, because you'd want that in the...
No, and they were cramming that stuff in the filming to get that thing ready. I think it came out Christmas of 76 or something, or November, or, you know, Thanksgiving, something like that.
Well, why would you want a longer version of something with no Kong in it?
Right.
Yeah. It's just, and I think in NBC just wanted to pad it out because it was a 2-hour film. They didn't want to cut it for a 1-night airing, but if you do it as a 2-night thing and you got all that extra footage, then you got all these reasons to tune in. You know, it's like a big event.
What do you guys think of the original, John?
Yeah, the 1933?
Yeah.
Love it. I think it's like, it's closer to an Edgar Rice Burroughs type of story brought to cinematic life than just about anything based on Burroughs' books. So it's like Land That Time Forgot with a giant ape, and it gets going, and it has one thing that I prefer to every remake and version or whatever. In the movie, the hero who rescues Fay Wray from Kong is just a ship crew member who just turns out to be brave.
Yeah.
Like, he's just the bravest ship guy. He's a blue collar hero, working man.
He's just a normal misogynist, as
in the
'76
version, Jeff Bridges is the annoying environmentalist.
Yeah.
And in Peter Jackson, lifts from the '76 version because he has like a Adrian Brody is this like playwright.
He's a screenwriter. He's like,
yeah,
he's the writer.
Like,
he's a nerd.
You know. It's like, come on, these guys, that's not going to be the guy going through the jungle to rescue Andaro.
No, Jack Driscoll is, and it's funny, like, Fay Wray's like, always like, I thought you hated women. And he's like, well, yeah, I do, but you're not women.
Yeah, but I like it. He's just a normal tough blue collar dude.
Yeah, yeah. He's just the tough. No, but yeah, that was one thing about Jackson's version is he's a screenwriter. Oh, I'm
intellectual, not me. You know, that sort of thing.
Eric, what about you? The original King Kong.
Yeah, I'll echo what John said. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
It's hard to. It's very difficult to improve what's there. So, but they've tried what twice now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing,
pace. They never get the pacing and the storytelling that's in the thing moves. It just
I
goes.
Think you never. Yeah, it certainly does. You never see it mentioned in like a screenplay class ever. Probably because it's a giant monkey movie and therefore it's beneath contempt. But
it's really well paced. The only thing is some of the effects are clearly like people standing with guns in front of a screen shooting at. Screen in like it goes on for a while where I'm like, okay, they're in front of a blue screen the whole
it's
time.
1933.
It's hard to be too hard.
There's always this idea with everyone that comes out that like, oh, well, there's two reasons why they do it. One, it's name recognition and they can put butts in seats because you can have King Kong. And then two, it's just like, well, we're going to make it better because our effects are going to be better. But really, that may be true, but, you know, they just can't get the pacing, as John says, and they never end up being better movies.
And as John said, you know, I will say, though, as far as Edgar Rice Burroughs stuff goes, John Carter, the Disney one, pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I'm saying that basically when you think about the way a Burroughs novel moves and how you basically just got a monster or some cliffhanger danger every chapter because they were originally published in magazines, you know, as like weekly serials or monthly serials or whatever. It's hard to beat the way King Kong is structured. Yeah. The 33 Kong is structured and paced. It's like, that's like a Burroughs novel brought to life, or like any 30s pulp adventure, you know, that you would see from, you know, thrilling adventure stories or whatever the hell, you know, like something with that type of pacing, like a Doc Savage or anything like that.
You also get a sense on Skull Island when you're in the first one, in the original, you also get a sense that like everywhere you move, you could just die at any second. It's really dangerous.
Yeah.
It feels
very perilous the whole time.
So many creatures and things.
You know, that was something, you know, just to give Jackson some credit, it was kind of cool when he recreated the spider pit sequence.
Right.
You know, just to sort of, you know, play like this lost sequence. Well, let's like recreate it using the old way. And they shot it on film. And that was pretty cool.
And they have their own spider pit sequence in the movie itself, which is pretty boring stuff. It does slow everything down to a crawl, but it was interesting to watch.
I remember it was pretty hair-raising. In fact, you know what the best thing to come out of Peter Jackson's Kong was? The video game. The video game was excellent, I thought. Anyway. But what about...
You're not me into that, so I've never played it, so you're not going to suck into a conversation where we excise... from the conversation for half an hour.
It's one of those games, just real quick, it's one of those games that it's a rare AAA game that is very short. You can beat it in like a few hours. It's like the length of a movie. But it's very exciting to play. But anyway, so what about Son of Kong? I've actually never seen Son of Kong.
I've seen it. Yeah. It's a movie that, it's one of the first sequels, I guess, because, Kong came out earlier in the year, 1933, and then they had Son of Kong come out the same year, but in December. So it was a rush production. And if King Kong never existed and Son of Kong would have been the only one. I think it would be as impossible as that is because it's a sequel, but you know what I mean? It would probably be more well-regarded, but as it stands, it's okay. It's the continuing adventures of the film director.
Carl Denham.
Carl Denham. He's being sued by everybody in New York because of the damage, and he runs away from all the litigators onto a ship and then goes back to Skull Island and finds the Little Kong. And you don't get to the island till like the last, literally like the last 25 minutes. You don't actually meet.
It's a pretty short movie too.
The kid. It's a short. Yeah. Yeah. And you get a lot of fun, you know, stop motion stuff in that. But the movie's not to say that it's boring before that. It's not bad. It's not a bad little movie. It's worth watching.
What about Mighty Joe Young?
I tried to squeeze in the original before the recording here, and what I saw was very good. I'm only familiar with the Charlize Theron remake though from '98.
And didn't Harryhausen work on the original Mighty Joe Young?
He did. Yeah. As a first technician, I believe he's credited as. I just saw it in the credit. The Theron one in '98, the Disney one, is good though.
What?
Yeah, it's a matter of excellent.
Have any of you seen King Kong Lives, written by Steven Pressfield?
Many years ago on videotape.
It looks kind of cool. I want to see it.
don't remember it being as bad as what's claimed.
No, it looks cool. Like Kong,
it was fun. I think it came out at a time when audiences did not want a giant monster movie and did not want a Kong movie.
Yeah.
What I recall, it's one of those movies I would like to see again, just to see if it was as bad or, you know, as everybody says, was it as adequate as I remember? And I remember it being fun. Like, it was just a American giant monster movie. I certainly had no problem with that being made.
Yeah,
you know?
Pressfield has talked about how crushingly disappointed, because he worked so hard on it to make it, like, this great script, and then it comes out and, like, everyone hated it.
Yeah. And it's because his career was riding on that, so,
yeah,
you know.
And there was an unreleased NES version of the game, of the movie. you want to tell us about that, Hunter? Unreleased
yes.
in America.
Yes, yes, actually, the NES King Kong Lives. It was called Donkey Kong Jr.
I'm not kidding, though.
There is one?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. Wow. Was it just a Donkey Kong ripoff? I hope so. That would be super.
No, no, it's an adventure game.
Oh,
weird.
Yeah, you're Kong running around Skull Island and like government facilities and things.
Sounds awesome. It sounds like Donkey Kong Country, to be honest.
It's funny.
It's not a side scroller. It's a top down, I think, sort of deal.
So it's like, yeah, it's Zelda.
I know. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Mighty Joe Young, because when I was a kid, that played on TV frequently. I think Kong was the King Kong was a more expensive movie to license for a TV airing, the original. But Mighty Joe Young, I think you could just buy a print and license it for 10 years and show it 3 times a year. I used to see it on TV all the time.
Did you watch the remake?
Yeah, I saw it in a theater, and I remember really enjoying it. I don't remember if it was a hit or anything. I know that Charlize Theron looking great was a selling point, and she does look good in that movie. And Rick Baker did the Mighty Joe Young effects, and they were terrific.
Yeah, I remember.
Like Jessica
awesome.
Lange, she never looked good again.
Exactly. She never looked that good ever again in a movie.
Yeah, I loved the Mighty Joe Young remake. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But King Kong Lives, I want to watch that.
Mighty Joe Young might be like the last that I can think of, because we're talking '98. It might be the last giant monster movie where everything is done on camera.
Yeah, it was all practical.
Might very well be. I mean, I know that there was some CGI. That's looking back at the original Jurassic Park, looking back at Mighty Joe Young, and it's a mixture between the two mediums. It's mostly practical. And then, I guess, with eyelids and maybe some movements here and there, it's helped by the in post. Like, that's kind of the way to do that. It looks better than anything else that's coming out today.
Okay. Yeah. And before I move on, we have to touch on the Ishiro Honda ones, Godzilla versus King Kong and King Kong Escapes.
Sure.
you know, Godzilla versus King Kong was a home video staple for me as a kid. I love it. I still love it. And King Kong Escapes is just Saturday morning cartoon goodness. I don't know. John, what do you think?
I was never a big fan of King Kong versus Godzilla when I was a kid because the American version is very screwed up.
Oh, yeah. You know? It's not. It's definitely compromised.
Yeah, it took away the If Could Be music and put in the Creature from the Black Lagoon music, you know, and the editing and everything. It just kind of screws it up. And I thought the IG Tsuburaya Kong suit is pretty awful. And King Kong Escapes is a lot of fun. It is an adaptation of a King Kong cartoon. It's like a live action version of it. It may have been the first one ever made.
Yeah, it was. It was an adaptation of a cartoon, and it feels.
And I love them. The Mechanikong, or you know, now we call it Mechakong. Back then, I think in the movie it was Mechanikong or something. Is a pretty cool robot creation, and I love it when Kong is fighting like a T-Rex, and the thing does like a flying drop kick on him. So I think it's a cool movie. I mean, it's goofy and it is what you expect it to be, but it's very fast paced and fun and colorful, and it's got the James Bond stuff done Toho style, and it's also, you know, got a lot of cool music, and yeah, it's got the If Could Be score, and it's terrific. And the villain's name is Doctor Who, no relation to the TV show.
One thing that was super disappointing about the Criterion Godzilla set was that it had a crap print of the original Japanese Godzilla versus Kong. And
yeah,
through no fault of theirs, Toho is just weird and wouldn't give it to them.
Toho doesn't want. Toho knows that Japanese fans can buy Criterion stuff from the States and have it shipped to Japan. They didn't want competing product to their own 4K remasters, whatever format they're gearing them up. It's a real dick thing to do.
Yeah,
but
I hate that.
Yeah, such bastards. But
you guys know anything or heard about? Of the King Kong ripoffs shortly after the 1933 Kong that the Japanese made, and now I think they're lost films. Do you know anything about that, John?
Only what you've probably also read on the web is like was King Kong and Edo, and I think there was another one like a giant white ape or something, and they are supposedly lost because of the war, you know, where a lot of Japanese films from the 30s were lost during World War II.
Makes sense.
And that's all I know. I've seen those photos. For years, we thought they were hoaxes. Like somebody was just caught up with a hoax. And then it was proven in Japanese film books these films did exist.
What about Mighty Peking Man? What can we say about that?
Well, the Shaw Brothers, never letting a good potential go to waste, they put together a competition for the De Laurentiis Kong and for Hong Kong theaters and... with Evelyn Kraft, the German actress, and one of the Yoon brothers, I think it was the Yoon who choreographed Charlie's Angels, is actually in the ape suit.
I've got the Quentin Tarantino Rolling Thunder DVD of that one.
I got the 88 Films Blu-ray, which has like both versions and everything, and I have not played it yet, but I think it's a fun movie. I prefer it to the De Laurentiis Kong.
Yeah,
I think
it's really.
It's a blast. It's so much fun. It's not pretentious. It's actually paced like the 33 Kong because it's a Shaw Brothers film, and they don't waste a frame.
They don't mess around.
They don't do that pretentious stuff. They don't have a John Barry score making everything somber and all that nonsense. And yeah. Danny Lee, star of Inframan, and the John Woo's The Killer is the lead in that one. It's a good film. I think it's a lot of fun.
And that's another thing about this movie is I thought the John Barry score was disappointing. I'm a big John Barry fan, and you know it didn't really jump out at me.
Yeah, I had misremembered the score as being good, and then when I watched it over the weekend, I was I think my memory was a little faulty. Maybe I was confusing it with a Bond score.
Yeah, well, it's just John Barry's a name you associate with quality, but not.
Yeah, Lion in Winter or something, you know, and then it's kind of just kind of the same notes over and over again.
We should probably talk about the other Dino De Laurentiis giant monster movie the next year, White Buffalo, right?
Oh, yeah.
Also, Rinaldi, yeah? I believe he designed
that. Yeah, Rimbaldi built the White Buffalo. It's a better effect, I think. But it was De Laurentiis wanted that Jaws money.
You know what we're talking about, Hunter? You seen it?
I've never seen it, no.
It's worth a watch. It's Charles Bronson as Wild Bill Hickok and these kind of goofy lenses. And it's got a dreamlike quality about it that is kind of appealing to me. It's about the first 45 minutes are really good, I think. And then once they actually go for the whole Moby Dick analogy where he's going after the white buffalo, it's where it kind of starts falling apart. But the buffalo effects, which are usually cited as really shitty, it's actually really cool, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then Orca was 78.
Oh, that's right, Orca. Yeah.
I think it was 78 or 77.
Either 77 or 78, yeah.
Directed by J. Lee Thompson, White Buffalo.
Yeah.
Would go on to direct basically every Charles Bronson movie post, 1982 or 83.
Because he's the only director Bronson got along with.
Yeah.
Hey, I like Jay Lee's British.
Hey.
But he's not a creep like Michael Winner.
I want to shoot this guy while he's naked. Can I do that, Jay Lee? I think we all agree that the Peter Jackson one is kind of, nice try, but really not memorable.
It's probably more entertaining than this one, but I probably prefer this one just for the reasons I've stated earlier.
Yeah. And I think I heard James Rolfe say this. I'll pick something that I can see in front of a camera over a cartoon any day,
Yeah. Yeah. But the first one reigns supreme, not even close, of course. What this one's got going for it is, the aforementioned suit and stuff, but also the locations. The only one of the three of the same story is the only one with real locations.
Yeah.
Because they did a lot of filming in Hawaii. Yeah, it's Hawaii.
Yeah, when they land on shore, it looks great. The fog and all that.
It's terrific. I was like, that had to be like, oh, they caught it on the weather, or they consulted the weather report or something to get that shot.
Yeah.
That looked fantastic.
And I have not seen the new Godzilla versus Kong. But John, you said it was all right.
It's okay. It's you know what? It's on the maturity. A lot of people were complaining it was stupid. It's like, yeah, we know it's stupid. It's on the level of King Kong Escapes. It's like a Saturday morning cartoon brought to life. Okay. If you look at it that way, it's enjoyable.
Fine.
It's not great. It's not as good as it should have been. I was actually thinking, watching this, what we should have seen. I think there's been some memes about this. We should have seen like the 76 Rick Baker King Kong versus the Godzilla of Godzilla 1985.
Ooh,
like if De Laurentiis had thought about that in like 86 instead of King Kong Lives, he'd have made a fortune.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like have two really good monster suits instead of like, now we just have CGI cartoons beating each other up. But it's like, but if you have like the suits, like the men in suits and the animatronics and stuff and the puppetry and everything, I think that would be way more impressive than these kind of nerd with light pen shows that we've been seeing in the last 20 years.
Yeah, because I think with this King Kong from 1976, when I watch it, I think I overrate it a little bit because it's because of the suit work, because I'm seeing something practical. And I think that makes it go up in my estimation, where if I had watched it, back in the 90s or something, I probably would have just thought it was all right to whatever,
Yeah.
I think some of the jokes work. There's that scene at the end where he escapes from the cage in the exhibition, and there's a line of dialogue that's thrown out. Line of dialogue is an escape-proof cage certified by the New York City government, and of course he breaks out of it.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
And I love he's in a giant. They reference Exxon. It's a tiger in your tank. We'll bring an ape. Charles Grodin's terrific in this movie.
Yes,
as the bad guy, just really good.
And he's not even that much of a villain, really. It's only towards the end where he becomes really kind of nasty, threatening to ruin, derail her career if she doesn't do this stuff. But he's not really portrayed. He's basically the Carl Denham of the movie.
Yes, he is.
Only treated a little bit more villainously. But he never really... He gets stepped on, right? He does. He gets
crushed when he escapes from the...
Originally, he was supposed to have lived, but preview audiences were pissed off that he survived. So they re-edited that scene to make it look like Kong stomped him dead.
That's why it looks kind of weird.
It's all in editing. It was not filmed that way. Apparently, Grodin was surprised when he saw the movie in a theater that he died in the film.
But he's not completely unlikable, I don't think. I think he's only very fairly a villain. Mm-hmm. This one's kind of like the bridging point between the supposed romance between Anne Darrow and the monkey. And the first one, she's just like this terrified captive, and Kong is treated with some sympathy, especially at the end of the movie. And here there's a little bit more sympathy for Kong, but she's still terrified of Kong. She doesn't want anything really to do with him. But then it's the Peter Jackson.
She punches him in the face.
Yeah, she does. But then it's in the third, it's the Peter Jackson one where they do this weird fan film romance between her and the monkey. Like they go ice skating together.
It turns into Titanic at the end where it's like a tragic romance where the ape is Jack and she's Rose.
I remember thinking in the theater, that's very strange.
Yeah, I remember thinking like when the movie came out, I remember thinking, because Titanic wasn't that long ago when it came out.
Right.
And I remember thinking it's going for that Titanic sort of Oscar like thing, but with a woman and her monkey, you know.
My wife caught a little bit of the end of this one, and there's that scene where they're running from Kong in New York, and what's the Anne Darrow's character's name in this? Duan.
Your sign, baby? So 70s. Oh man.
She's like a weird wispy ditz, and my wife asks, is she mentally ill? And I'm like, it's possible that that's what they were going for. I don't know.
Well, every woman in the 70s was mentally ill. Come on.
Yeah, she's like this vapid airhead, and it's pretty.
Yeah. Because they're running from Kong, and she's just like, come on, get me a drink. I'm like, what? There's no time for this.
Run your ass to Jersey. Wow. Yeah, but she was like, oh, you said apes can't swim, Jack. And then that shot is Kong swimming. It was pretty funny. Like, I don't even think it was meant to be funny, but it's like hilarious. It's like Kong swimming to like somber John Barry music.
How much better would this show have been had Hunter just watched that Rick Baker interview?
I know, I didn't even think about it. I mean, I was going through the extras, and I must have missed it. I don't know.
I was like, for sure, Hunter has listened to the Rick Baker interview and have all sorts of great details.
Oh man, so bad.
Oh well, we still want you to buy the Shout Factory Blu-ray, and
you know
can
what?
Tell us
in our group,
how good it is.
What I should do is watch it and then just like throw my thoughts in the middle of the show.
Yeah, post. Yeah, why not? Do it. Yeah. Otherwise, we're just talking about King Kong Lives NES.
Yeah. Yeah, the Mr. Aeroshelf post show notes.
Yeah, do it. Why not?
I'll do it. I'll pop it in.
All right, guys. So the reason I missed the King Kong Rick Baker interview was that the interview was not a featurette. It's a commentary track. So I haven't had the chance to listen to the whole thing. I've only gotten to dip my toe in, but it's so extensive that I want someone else from the show to watch it so we can talk about it. But just to give you a few thoughts immediately, it is as dishy as John says it is, or it says it's purported to be. Rick Baker goes pretty hard. He talks about how badly put together a lot of the production was, about how he was basically competing with Carlo Rambaldi. And we all saw how that went. And he talks about where he was in his career, how King Kong was an influence on him. It's very interesting stuff, but yeah, he doesn't hold anything back. So it's very interesting, but I'd like to do a little follow-up show on it. So I'm going to save our thoughts for now and wait until I can talk to someone on the show. All right, back to it.
All right. Anything else to talk about with King Kong?
how bad Jessica Lange is in her acting ability.
Yeah, but she's not there for acting.
She's not there for that.
Yeah, yeah, I know, I know. But I was just saying her performance is very noticeable.
She's there so King Kong can molest her. And
well, the famous story is Meryl Streep auditioned for the film.
Yeah, but she wasn't hot enough.
And Dino walked in and said in Italian that she's too ugly for Kong.
Yeah.
And not knowing that Meryl Streep speaks fluent Italian. And Meryl Streep spoke back to him in Italian, "Sorry, I'm not what you're looking for."
Yep.
And also the notorious quotes of Dino saying in this movie, "The Kong die," was inspired a pretty decent SNL sketch from 76 where John Belushi played Dino De Laurentiis. And he was saying basically just verbatim what De Laurentiis was saying in interviews. "Hey, nobody cry with the shark die in Jaws. Everybody going to cry with the Kong die." And I mean, it was just, they didn't have to write anything for the sketch.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. Yeah.
When the big monkey died, everybody going to cry.
Yeah, everybody going to cry.
That was in the Golden Turkey Awards book that, everybody going to cry when the Kong die.
Yes. And actually, it is something to say that maybe Peter Jackson loved Kong too much.
Mm. Oh yeah,
in his he's too sympathetic with Kong, and it's like, and I think that's a problem with Guillermo del Toro's movies as well. He's always too sympathetic with the monsters.
Well, yeah, because I am the monster here.
I am the monster.
I am the monster because I am fat, and women won't have sex with me.
I'm a rich Mexican who loves communism.
I'm a rich Spaniard who pretends to be Mexican, and you will not have sex with me because I am fat. Oh.
So she's going to fuck Creature from Black Lagoon.
I will make movie where Sally Hawkins have sex with Fishman.
See, like, because I thought, you know, Julie Adams should have fucked the creature from the Black Lagoon.
When I watched Predator, I thought it would have been better if Arnold was a woman and if he had sex with the Predator.
And it could have been a man and fucked the Predator. It would have been very progressive.
Yeah.
They really missed an opportunity at the time.
These days, Arnold probably would have done it, you know?
Yeah, now you do it. As long as he gets to put in a rhino message.
Yeah, as long as I get to...
Remember, vote for Bloomberg.
Yeah, exactly.
really doing some acting here, getting it on with the Predator.
That'd be horrifying now. whatever you thought that would have been like in 87, it'd be even worse now.
Even worse. Oh, man. So anything else we've missed?
No, we always miss something, don't we?
Yeah,
we're gonna slap ourselves in the face when
if you look fast, you can spot Joe Piscopo. I actually think they promoted it on Joe Piscopo's appearance when NBC reran it like in the mid-80s or something. And yeah, I think he's only like in it for like 10 seconds or something.
It's like when American Graffiti came on TV during Three's Company, they would go, "American Graffiti starring Suzanne Summers." And she's just the blonde chick that
oh, yeah, she's barely in it.
Yeah, he just obsesses over.
They did that all the time. She's barely in the damn movie.
Yeah.
Do you think this has a better legacy than the Peter Jackson one?
Yeah, it does. That's what's weird.
I think so because, you know, this movie, if you talk to Gen Xers, they have a big affection for this film.
Yeah.
And I just don't think you're going to see the Peter Jackson one having the staying power. The Peter Jackson one has some cool stuff in it. You know, it's not a movie that I completely dislike. You know, but like John said, I think Jackson is too much of a fan. And
He can't distance himself from the material.
Yeah, and this movie, you know, it is also going for the big prestigious thing, but it just has more things that it gets right. It has a lot of things it gets wrong. But there's a generation of people who were kids when this movie came out, and it just hit at the right spot, you know.
Yeah, I just don't see – yeah, if anything, the Jackson one has kind of, in a way, been memory-holed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Skull Island, when that came out, you know – it was as though the Jackson one wasn't a thing.
It's the same model, though, right? King Kong looks the same, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He looks.
And it's supposed to be the same Kong, right?
I don't know about that.
No,
it's not.
It's Skull Island. Skull Island and Godzilla versus Kong. It's the new Kong.
Skull Island takes place during Vietnam, doesn't it? Isn't it like a Vietnam?
Yeah. It takes place during Vietnam. That's when they discover Kong, and it's an island full of these weird skull face creatures. They actually have a name. I can't remember, but that's all he fights on the island.
But it's very much a Marvel post-Marvel property where it's
yes, it is. It's Warner Brothers and Legendary Pictures, their version of Kong.
And
Kong dies at the end of the Jackson 1-2, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he dies.
But he does look, if not similar to, he does look like the Skull Island one.
They are going for more of a gorilla Kong.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Willis O'Brien stop motion model puppet was kind of an original ape creature.
He kind of looks like a cartoon character. Like he's got these big eyes and very expressive face. That's almost like he almost feels like he's gonna be chasing Bosco around or something.
But he wasn't supposed to look realistic.
Like right. No, exactly.
Yeah, ape monsterish. He looks cute too.
There's a lot of character. They've actually put out a neat little toy or display item in the Stoner section of Target. It's like a new Kong toy thing that's based on the Willis O'Brien design.
Oh, I could tell you something. Little trivia, little behind the scenes nonsense here. You ready for it?
I'm ready. My body is okay.
So we just talked about Guillermo. So Del Toro and John Landis, no surprise, are huge fans of the original King Kong. There was a guy in town who had one of the exoskeletons that they used for the 30s film. Not exoskeletons, the wireframe skeleton or whatever you want to call them of Kong without the fur and stuff. And he was selling it, but I guess he wasn't asking for a terrible amount of money for what it was, especially between two rich millionaires. They could have afforded it together. I think it was something like in the $100,000 range. And so John Landis and Del Toro got together and started spreading a rumor around town that it was actually a fake. So that drove the price down. And when the price went down, they swooped in and they took it.
What? Really? Absolute. Oh, but they're fans. They're fans. They'd never do that.
Yeah. No, we're fans, guys.
Yeah,
they're such fans, Monster Kids.
Cheap dicks, is what they are.
Yeah, they're total dicks, both of them.
And what I don't understand is, like, is it a timeshare thing? Does John get it for Monday through Thursday, and then all throughout the weekend, Guillermo takes it, and then maybe they alternate on Sundays? How do they both own it?
Yeah, like, what are you going to do with it, exactly? Yeah. Is Guillermo going to have it fight, like, some little puppet he made for At the Mountains of Madness that he's never made?
He's gonna fuck it or something.
His Cthulhu puppet's gonna like slime it or some shit. he's gonna stick his dick in the Kong exoskeleton.
Yeah, the Mountains of Madness. Everybody talks about that one as like the greatest of all H.P. Lovecraft stories. Is I don't know, kind of boring.
Yeah,
I think it's because it has this movie potential, and that's the only reason they're crazy about it. But I don't see anybody caring about big CGI. Elder monsters,
I don't care about that. I guess the stuff with the penguins at the beginning is like these giant penguins. They're kind of creepy. Like that's kind of cool in the story. But
if they did it with like puppets, it'd be cool.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And like men in suits or whatever.
That would be nice.
Yeah,
it's like mimes or whatever, acrobats playing the creatures.
Get Doug Jones again for the
50th. Yeah.
Of course. All right. Anything to add about King Kong 1976?
Well, if you'd listen to that Rick Baker interview,
I'm gonna pop it in there. It's gonna be in there.
Yeah,
by the time they're hearing this, everybody's gonna listen to it and they're gonna be like, "What's John talking about? We just heard it."
But I can't think of anything else that really. Supposedly Lorenzo Simple, I do remember this. He, in the original screenplay he wrote, Dwan was a much smarter character, and I think she was like a camera woman or something. She wasn't a yacht girl. Mm. And I think when they got the idea, we're gonna make a new Marilyn Monroe sex symbol with our whoever we choose to be the Kong girl, you know, that changed in the script.
I think they changed it because they knew that Meghan Markle was coming, and so they were trying to warn us.
They were getting the world ready. It was a warning.
There's going to be a yacht girl who terrorizes America using the royal family as a
had
cover.
Had they cast Jane Kennedy, it might have worked as a good warning instead of you know, Jessica Lange.
Well, Dino saved us from the Meryl Streep alternate universe.
That is true. Hey, she no look good enough.
She no look good. It's like when the Stephen Bach tried to save us from Isabelle Huppert by preventing her from being in he wanted to prevent her from being in Heaven's Gate, but Heaven's Gate bombed, so ironically he saved us. He said she had a face like a potato. That's what he wrote.
Yeah, there's our next negative iTunes review.
I didn't say it. He said it. Stephen Bach.
Little boys in a treehouse talking about women's looks.
Don't kill the messenger. Come on.
Go cancel him. He's the one who said it.
We're quoting people.
Well, Jessica Lange is hot as shit in this, and the locations are great. I like the monkey suit stuff. Major problems, which is why I'm giving it a unenthusiastic 6 out of 10.
What about you, John?
I could give it like a 5.
I am going to give it a 7. I'm overrating it. I'm going to do that.
A 6 because of the positives. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, I think all the big monster stuff in it is way fun. And, you know, yeah, it has its. And it honestly, you don't really get to Kong till like almost an hour in. But the Blu-ray looks good. The monster stuff is cool. Yeah. You know, it's fun. I think it's better than the Peter Jackson one. So there you go.
It is. I will agree with that. That's like a 3 for me.
I haven't seen the Peter Jackson one since, I think, shortly after the theater. As I said, I saw it on TV and I was like, ugh, didn't work for me. I want to say this gets to the island a lot faster than the first one. And I think it gets faster to the island than the Peter Jackson one, too.
One thing about this one is the ship is off the port pretty quick. You don't have, like, even in the original,
in the ocean.
Like Carl Denham's looking for this actress and blah, 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 you know. Yeah. And in this one, you know, Jeff Bridges sneaks on, the ship is out, boom. So,
yeah. It's better than Skull Island, I will say that, since I'm the only one who's seen it.
Yeah, yeah. And this director didn't have a large, gross beard.
Yes, and he didn't claim to fight, you know, alt-righters on the plane.
He wasn't fighting the cast of the Charlottesville riot on a plane.
Yeah. He wasn't like beating up Proud Boys at a pool hall or something.
All the while live tweeting it somehow.
Live tweeting is him saving the world from, you know, internet Nazis on the plane.
Yeah. I hope he loses his next 10 movie deals.
Same. I hope the last thing we saw him in is his little cameo in Death Stranding. That's it. Done. Done. Anyway.
Needs to be the end of that. I'm tired of these guys with their beards.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, anything you want to plug, Eric?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, with that, I'm going to say adios.
Yeah, peace out.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination.
find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com, type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.